Han listened with half his attention as the man continued with the vid message.
As many of our visitors are already aware, Alderaan is a peaceful world, a world where we have eschewed weapons and their use. While you are our guest, we ask that you respect our traditions and our laws by leaving your weapons with the Port Authority during your stay here. You will find that Alderaan has much to offer visitors. We have almost no crime.
Right, Han thought, I'll just bet.
And no pollution. Our lakes are clear, our air is pure, and our people are happy. We have wonderful museums, and we invite you to visit them. Be sure not to miss our grass paintings as you fly over them on your landing approach. Our grass painters are among the greatest artists in the galaxy. We welcome visitors to our beautiful world, and we ask only that you come in peace and that you obey our...
With a muttered curse, Han leaned over and snapped the audio portion of the broadcast off. A whole planet full of honest citizens? I'll believe it when I see it. The capital city of Alderaan, Aldera, was located on an island in the middle of a lake. The site of the lake was actually a meteor crater that had filled with water from underground springs. The lake was surrounded by a series of low, jagged foothills whose sides were splashed with green fields and forests. The water filling the millennia-old crater sparkled brilliant ice blue in the early morning rays of the sun. The spaceport was on the far side of the island, and Han swooped low over the city on his assigned approach vector. In just minutes, he was bringing the Elysian Dream down for a perfect landing. A medical unit arrived promptly at Han's request and ran a preliminary scan on Murg.
There is no life-threatening trauma as a result of the head injury. However, we will need to run further tests.
Han watched the stretcher bearing the Togorian vanish into the transport, which then headed to the medical facility. He grinned to himself, thinking, "This is a piece of cake. All I have to do is tell the priests that I was boarded and the pirates took the Glitterstim. Murg was out cold. He doesn't know what happened. I can sell this spice here on Alderaan, stash the money in an account here, then send for it later." The metropolis glittered white in the sunshine, as clean and luxurious as a dream city. Han scanned the streets as he walked, looking for a particular type of individual. Finally, he spotted what he was looking for. A boy dressed in clothes that were borderline too small, ragged, and not very clean, was sauntering along the street, glancing oh so casually at each passerby. A pickpocket. 10 years ago, he'd been that kid. Han increased the length of his strides until he caught up with the boy. As expected, the lad shifted his weight and altered his stride to brush against Han. Also expected were the lightning-fast fingers that delved deep into the pilot's jacket pocket. The fingers came away empty. Han's ID and the few credits he was carrying were sealed into the inside pocket of his coverall. Han lengthened his strides until he was ahead of the boy. Then, without warning, he spun on his heel and confronted the child. "Hey there," he said pleasantly, holding up the boy's ident disc and money. "Lose something?" The boy's mouth dropped open in amazement. Then he recovered and glared at Han. Then he launched into a furious and detailed description of Han's ancestry, personal habits, and probable destination. Han listened patiently until the urchin began to sputter. Then he waved for silence. "I'll give him back in exchange for some information." The boy glared sullenly.
"What kind of information, you son of a diseased pervert?"
"Watch your mouth, Junior. I just want to know where in this town people go to make deals."
"What kind of deals?"
"You know what kind of deals. Deals they don't want the law to know about. Deals for substances you can't buy legally."
"Spice?"
The boy frowned.
"What kind?"
"Glitterstim." The boy's brow creased even deeper.
"What's that?"
"Just my luck," Han thought. "I run into the only dumb pickpocket in Aldera. What about Andrus? You got Andrus here? Used to flavor food, preserve it?" The kid nodded.
"Yeah, Andrus, we got that. Expensive stuff."
"Right. If you or your friends wanted some, how would they get it? Buy it in a store or a government agency?" The boy shook his head.
"No, man. We'd buy it from Derek Lil."
Alderaanian taverns were much too clean and well-lit, Han decided, an hour later. He'd been to 3 so far, and none of them appeared seamy enough for his purposes. No sign of Derek Lil, either. Han finally ran down Lil in the fifth tavern he visited. He was playing sabacc, and when he saw Han standing there watching the game, he cordially waved him over.
Care to sit in for a hand?
Han stared directly at Darak Lil and raised his eyebrows. All depends on what you'll accept for a stake, Lil. The man's expression didn't change a whit as he glanced casually up.
You got something good, pilot?
Might.
Well, the ante is 20 credits.
Han shook his head. Changed my mind. Going out to get some fresh air. He stood outside, leaning against the alley wall for about 5 minutes. Then someone approached him.
So, what have you got?
Han turned to look at the man.
Glitter stim. 100 vials.
Wow, where'd you come by that?
None of your business. Want it? Give you a good price. Lil sounded regretful.
Wish I could, young fella. Wish I could. But I'd be a fool to take it. Just no market here on Alderaan.
Han groaned.
What a world, he thought. So goody-goody that a guy can't even sell a perfectly good cargo of spice.
Murg was released from the medical center the next day, and they made an uneventful trip back to Yalicia. As soon as they landed, Han was summoned to meet with Terroenza. The minute the High Priest saw Han, his expression, which Han was beginning to be able to read, turned positively benevolent.
Pilot Drago, I understand you are a hero. Your bravery and courage are beyond price, but I have ordered a bonus to be placed in your account.
Han blinked, then smiled. Thanks, sir. Terroenza continued.
We have lost 2 ships that failed to return from their rendezvous points over the past year and a half. You are the first pilot to get a look at your attackers and return to tell us who they were. What did you see?
The priests were extremely interested in all the details of the attack, and Han told the story as thoroughly as he could.
Well, it all happened real fast, but I'm pretty sure that the ship I destroyed was Drell-built.
Did they communicate with you? Give you a chance to surrender before attacking?
No, they shot first and just kept on shooting. They weren't trying to destroy the dream, because if they had been, they'd have done it. But they had no interest in the ship. These guys were out to cripple the dream and kill me and Murg. I think we need to strengthen the shielding, sir.
I will order that to be done, pilot.
The huge Talandatil folded his tiny arms, and his massive forehead wrinkled as he considered what Han had told him.
They attacked just after we came out of hyperspace, like they were waiting for us.
Sir, I'd like to ask a favor.
Yes?
My blaster was taken from me when I arrived on Yalicia. I'd like it returned. If there's any chance I might be boarded by pirates sometime in the future, I want to be able to shoot back.
Terroenza nodded agreement.
I will order your weapon returned to you, pilot. You have certainly demonstrated your loyalty and earned our trust by your actions these last few days.
The priest waved a small hand.
Tell me, pilot Drago, did it never occur to you to attempt to sell your cargo and tell us it had been stolen by pirates?
Han shook his head. No, sir, it didn't. Han decided it was time to meet Jollis Neeble, the Sulistan pilot who was put on sick leave. Neeble was sitting in his room in the medical unit watching a galactic news documentary. Han walked over and offered his hand to the big-eyed, droopy-jowled being. Neeble invited him to sit down.
I've been wishing to speak with you for some time, but I've been quite ill and confined to these few rooms where the air is specially filtered for me.
Han looked closely at him. That's too bad, pal. What happened? Overwork? The Sulistan's small, wet mouth pursed unhappily.
Too many missions, yes. Then one day I awoke and my hands...
He held out his delicate hands with their narrow, oval claw nails.
My hands would not stop trembling. I could no longer handle the controls of my ship. Too much hauling of Glitterstim. Medical droid says I have a bad allergy to it.
Han thought of how he'd feel if he couldn't fly anymore. Hey, pal, I'm really sorry. I hope you'll be better soon. He lowered his voice and switched to Trader's argot.
Understand you, Trader Talk, friend?
The Celestan nodded.
Not speak, but understand fine.
Han glanced up at the ceiling. Were the Yelishans or their security monitoring this room? No way to be sure, but he hadn't met too many droids who could translate traitor's argot because it was a bastardized mix of a dozen or more tongues and several dialects. He waved up the volume on the newscast, then mouthed, "Friend pilot, when hands grow steady, then if me you, not say farewell, just fly off bad spice world, quick, quick. Understand?" The Celestan nodded. Han lowered the volume slightly, then told Nebel about the attack. "How'd they find out those coordinates?" Jealous Nebel sighed.
I believe that the Talanda Teal are worried that these pirate vessels may in fact be from Nalhutta. Hutt dispatched ships masquerading as pirates."
Han whistled softly. "By all the minions of Zendor, that takes the cake. The Hutts are fighting against each other, but the Hutts are the ones who are running this place."
"Ah, you saw Zaval, then?"
"If that's the bloated son of a gun who rides around on that repulsor sled, I sure did. Haven't yet had the honor of meeting him face to face."
"Pray you never do, Vic. Zaval, like most Hutts, is not easy to please. The Hutts and the Talanda Teal, their caretakers, profit in two ways from Yelisha. First, there is the processed spice. But the Yelishan Hutts must buy their spice from other Hutt families who provide the raw materials. Have you ever heard of Gilliak or of Jabba?"
Han frowned. "Jabba the Hutt? Isn't he the guy who pretty much controls Nar Shaddaa, the smuggler's moon that orbits Nalhutta?"
"That's right. He divides his time between Nalhutta and a spice transshipping operation he runs through a back-of-beyond planet called Tatooine."
"Tatooine? Never heard of it." Nebel shuddered.
"Trust me, you don't want to go there. It's a dump."
"I'll keep that in mind. So this Jabba and Gilliak get the raw spice and ship it here for processing, right?"
"Yes. But lately, I believe, they may be trying to increase their profit by sending out ships to masquerade as pirates and having them hijack the Elysian spice ships. That way, Jabba and Gilliak get the processed spice for nothing, something that would please them greatly."
Han nodded. "What I'm figuring is that this whole setup on Yelisha is just one big scam to get their lousy spice processed cheap."
"That is not their only motive, Vic. There is another way the priests profit from these colonies. They run slaves,"
Nebel said bluntly.
"The Yelishans export the pilgrims from the spice factories when they consider them fully trained, all will to resist removed. They are taken to other worlds and sold. Their places in the factories are filled by fresh shipments of pilgrims."
Han nodded grimly. "And the slaves are too cowed and brainwashed to tell the truth."
"Certainly. And even if they did talk, who listens to a slave?"
Once outside, Han decided to try to catch up with 921 at evening devotions and have a few words with her. He had to figure out some way to get her out of that factory and yet keep her here on Yelisha until he could help her escape. He rounded a turn near the Plain of Flowers and nearly ran headlong into the first of the pilgrims on their way back from devotions. They were staggering or shambling along, that drugged, ecstatic look in their glazed eyes. Han found 921 in the crowd and hurried up to her. "Hi." She looked up at him in the twilight and said uncertainly, "Hi. You've been gone for a while." Han took her arm and fell into step with her. "Off-world. Had some cargo to transport." There was a moment of silence before she spoke. "How was your voyage, Vic?" Han was pleased. It was the first time she'd betrayed any curiosity about his life. He picked his way down the muddy path. "Turned out okay. Pirate shot at me, though."
"Pirates?"
She looked distressed.
You could have been hurt."
He smiled at her and shifted his grip so they were walking hand in hand. "How nice to know you care." He took her hand and raised it to his lips. "I missed you while I was away."
"You did?"
He couldn't tell whether the thought pleased or distressed her. Maybe both. "Yeah, I thought about you." It occurred to Han that this was the first time he'd ever been this honest about his feelings with a girl. For once in his life, he wasn't putting on an act. I didn't want to, but I did. You do care, don't you? Just a little? I don't know. She tried to pull her hand away, but Han wouldn't let it go. He began to kiss her scarred, lacerated fingers. The touch of her skin against his mouth intoxicated him as much as Alderaanian ale. Stop that, please. Why? He turned her hand over so he could kiss her wrist. Don't you like it? Yes. No, I don't know. She yanked her hand back, and this time Han let it go, but stepped forward to catch her sleeve. Please. He held her with his eyes as much as with his hand. Please, don't go. Can't you tell that I care about you? He swallowed. A lot. She caught her breath, and it sounded like a sob. I'm not supposed to care. Han couldn't hide the touch of bitterness in his voice. You won't even tell me your name. She stood poised for flight like a bird, her eyes wide and tormented. It's Bria. Bria Theron. Then, without another word, she picked up the skirts of her robe and ran away. The next day, after long hours of thinking and planning during a mostly sleepless night, Han went in search of Terawenza. He found the High Priest and Veritil relaxing in the mudflats. The High Priest waved an undersized arm.
Our heroic pilot, please join us.
Climb into that muck on purpose, Han thought, repressing a grimace, but he understood that the Talanda Til were offering him a great honor. He sighed. He stripped to his shorts. Carefully, he placed his belt pouch atop the pile of clothes, with the open end facing the mud hole. Then, with a grimace that he tried to turn into a smile, he stepped off the bank. Red mud oozed up his legs. Veritil caught up a blob of mud and slathered Han's back.
Isn't this wonderful?
Han nodded vigorously. Yeah, great. Terawenza settled deeper into the wallow.
So, Pilot Drago, why did you wish to speak with me?
Han got as comfortable as possible. Well, sir, I think I may have solved the problem of how to take care of your collection. Terawenza's massive head swiveled on his almost non-existent neck.
Really? How?
I've made friends with one of the pilgrims, a young woman from my homeworld. Before she came here, she was studying to be a museum curator, and she knows a lot about caring for antiquities, collectibles, stuff like that. I'll bet she could catalog and care for the stuff in your collection.
And where does she work?
In the Glitterstim factory, sir. Terawenza turned to Veritil, and the two priests began talking in their own language. Turning back to Han, Veritil said,
This pilgrim, would you say she's attractive as your species measures attractiveness? For example, do you find her appealing as a potential sexual partner?
Deep in the mud, Han crossed his fingers. 921? Oh, no, sir, she's... Well, to be frank, sir, she's so ugly that if I had a pet with a face that homely, I'd make it walk backward. When they heard Han's words, both priests guffawed and slapped their arms across their chests, which was apparently their species' way of paying tribute to a witty turn of phrase.
Very good, Pilot Drago, Terawenza boomed. You are indeed a sharp fellow, and I shall investigate this young woman.
Han squirmed around in the mud until he was facing the Sacredo. I've got something I'm curious about. Mind if I ask you a question?
Not at all, the younger priest said.
How do you guys do that thing with the pilgrims each night at the devotion? I've never been able to experience it. To himself, he added silently, because I've fought it as hard as I can. Veritil replied,
That is because you are a strong-minded individual, Pilot Drago. Our pilgrims come to us because they are weak and looking for guidance.
Terawenza spoke up.
The exhortation is a refinement of an ability we males of the Talanda Til use to attract females during our mating season. We create a frequency resonance within the recipient's brain that stimulates the pleasure centers. The humming vibration is produced by air flowing over the cilia in our neck pouches when we inflate them. Our females find it irresistible.
Veritil added, we males also have a low-grade empathic projection ability. By concentrating on feeling good, we can project those feelings at the crowd of pilgrims. Both effects, taken together, produce the exaltation.
Khan shook his head admiringly. Neat trick. Is it difficult?
Tirowenza answered,
not at all. What we find difficult is having to lead the pilgrims in those endless services and prayers. At times, I've been so bored that I nearly fell asleep.
Veritil boomed with his species version of laughter.
Last year, one of the sacredos did fall asleep. He fell right over. The pilgrims were most upset.
Khan laughed with them, but inside he was simmering with anger, thinking of the pilgrims staggering down the path, religious faith shining in their eyes. This place makes Garrus Shrike's scams look like nothing, he thought disgustedly. Now that he'd accomplished what he'd come here to do, Khan began to think about how to gracefully, metaphorically speaking, extract himself from the mud and the company of the priests. He was rescued by the arrival of a hut, who came gliding over the mudflat on his repulsor lift sled. A small squad of guards trotted alongside, panting in the heat as they struggled to keep up.
Zaval!
Tiruenza hailed his hut overlord, standing respectfully. Feeling like a fool, Han did likewise. This was Han's first close-up encounter with a hut, and he tried not to stare at the creature's huge, recumbent form, the enormous, pouchy eyes amid the leathery, tan skin, and the green slime that oozed from the corners of the being's mouth. The hut leaned toward Tirowenza and said in Huttese,
I received a message from home. Jabba and Jilliak deny everything, and we have no proof.
Han could just barely make out the meaning of the phrase thanks to his knowledge of Trader's Argot, which included a very meager sprinkling of Huttese. Tirowenza replied in Huttese, then continued in basic.
Zaval, I would like you to meet our brave pilot Vic Drago, who saved our shipment of Glitterstim.
The huge hut chuckled, a sound so deep and resonant that Han could feel it as well as hear it.
Greetings, Pilot Drago. You have our lasting gratitude.
Han flew many missions for the Elysians during the next 3 months. Several times he was able, with Merg's complicity, to make small side runs to hone his piloting skills and to allow Merg to practice with the weaponry. True to his promise, Tirowenza interviewed Bria and gave her the job of maintaining and cataloging his collection. Han was able to see her every day. Once she began getting better food in the mess hall and healthy exposure to fresh air and sunlight, that pale, too thin look vanished, and her eyes grew bright, her step lighter, and her smile came more readily. Bria continued to attend prayer times every morning and devotions every evening. Her loyalty, her spiritual self, was reserved for the one and the all. Still, there was no doubt that she enjoyed Han's company. As Bria climbed to the top of the dune, the wind grabbed her robes and whipped them about her legs. She had to hold on to her cap, lest it be blown off by the ocean wind. Below her, on the beach, she could see Vic, legs braced in a shooter's stance, his blaster in its holster, which he wore slung low, far down his thigh. Merg was some distance away, holding several black ceramic target pieces. Without warning, the big Togorian flung two of the targets into the air, one high and to his left, the other low and to his right. Vic's hand was a blur of motion. A blaster bolt shattered first the right, then the left target piece. Tiny droplets of slagged ceramic rained into the restless Elysian surf. Bria was struck, as she always was, by how good-looking Vic was, with his regular features, brown hair and eyes, and lean build. He wasn't a classically handsome man, but any woman who'd ever been on the receiving end of his smile wouldn't notice that. When he spotted her on the dune, he ran up to her. Before she could fend him off, he dropped a kiss on her forehead. She pushed him away. No, Vic, that's against my vows. I know, but someday, honey, you're gonna kiss me back. Suddenly serious, he looked down into her face. There's something we need to talk about, Bria. I've waited until you were better, because I'm afraid it's gonna be a shock. But you gotta find out sometime. Her heart began to race as Vic took a small device out of his pocket. This is the audio log recorder I pulled out of the dream's control panel. I'm gonna play a recording I made a couple of months ago. Vic turned on the recorder. Bria heard Vic greet the priests and heard them invite him to take a mud bath. Then, Bria caught her breath in dismay. She heard Veritil and Terowenza laughing and talking about the exaltation. They were saying it was not a divine gift. They were saying it had nothing at all to do with the one or the all. Bria's eyes narrowed in fury, and she shot to her feet. How could you? I thought you were my friend. Vic came toward her, hands raised placatingly. Bria, sweetheart, I am your friend. I did it for you. You need to know the truth. I'm sorry, you're... Bria's hand and arm seemed to move of their own volition, coming up in a roundhouse slap that connected solidly with his cheek. You're lying. You faked that to make me break my vows. I'm sorry, Bria. Sorrier than I can say, but I didn't fake it. I'm gonna prove that to you. Digging into his pocket, he held out a small black vial. Bria knew only too well what it was. Glitterstim? Where did you get it? Light fingered it during a delivery. This is the only way I can prove to you I'm not lying. If you expose it to light, then swallow it, it'll give you temporary telepathic abilities. You'll be able to read my mind, and you'll know that I'm not lying about the exaltation, and that I didn't fake that recording. Here. He dropped it into her hand. Take it. Bria looked down at the tube. I need to think about this, Vic. I need to decide what to do. Vic's words continued to plague her. That evening, when she stood before the altar of promises, and pilgrims were falling to their knees all around her, Bria let herself follow them. But as she did so, she flipped the vial of Glitterstim open. Within seconds, it activated, sparkling blue, but none of the pilgrims noticed. As she mouthed the drug, then swallowed it, the exaltation began. Bria shuddered as though she'd been blaster shot. The effects of the Glitterstim were immediate. Blood rushed through her body like a ship going into hyperspace. Her head pounded. Her mind opened in a way she'd never afterward be able to describe. As the waves of the exaltation took her, she experienced the pleasure of all the other pilgrims in the crowd. Gasping, Bria opened her eyes and stared at Terowenza, forcing herself to narrow her mind to encompass only his. Images. Alien images flooded Bria's mind, stamping themselves indelibly into her consciousness. Terowenza's mind, like that of every sentient, was full of surface trivia, wondering what he'd have for dinner, boredom with the ceremony, thoughts of the new security measures the Huts had ordered him to implement, a minor gastrointestinal churn in his middle. There was not a hint of divinity in the High Priest's mind. Bria wasn't surprised when Vic fell into step beside her after the devotions. As usual, he took her arm to help support her. This time she leaned against him, grateful for his support. You were right. Forgive me for doubting you. Her teeth began to chatter. I feel so betrayed. I don't have anything left. She began crying. Nothing. Nothing. Of course you do. Vic kissed her cheek gently. You've got us, right? Us? Sure. We're gonna be together, sweetheart. We're gonna get off this hellish planet and we're gonna be happy. Escape? Vic nodded. You got it. But you need those credits they're paying you to try and get into the academy. How can you give up that? He shrugged. One credit is as good as another. I'll just have to get it out of Terowenza another way. It took her a minute to realize what Vic was talking about. The collection. You're planning to steal Terowenza's collection and escape. Vic nodded approvingly. And you're gonna help me, right? She hesitated. Stealing was contrary to everything she'd ever believed in. But Tiruanza's antiquities weren't in a museum where the public could see them. They were being hoarded by a greedy private collector. Bria drew a long, shaky breath. Okay. I'll help you, Vic. She frowned. What about Murg? You told me that he'd given his word to guard you. Vic drew a long breath. That's the Vrelt in the kitchen. I don't know what I'm gonna do about him. I really like the big guy, but I'm afraid he'll be loyal to Tiruenza no matter what. What are we going to do? What if we can't get away? Don't worry, honey. Leave that to me. Vic sighed. I'm a better shot than Murg is, and much faster on the draw. I just wish I could convince him to throw in with us. If he did, I'd take him wherever he wanted to go, and give him enough credits to continue his search. He told her about Murg's lost mate. Bria drew in her breath, startled. Vic, there was another Tagorian here. I remember seeing one. Oh, 6, maybe 8 months back. Vic shook his head. I'll have to tell Murg. Those priests lie for a living. Bria pleaded. Please, Vic, tell me you didn't mean that about shooting Murg. Vic's voice was grim. I'll take care of him, whatever it takes. If I have to, I'll shoot him. Maybe I can just stun him. Or give him a knock on that thick skull of his, leave him tied up, so the priests won't blame him when we make our getaway. Just out of sight, Murg turned and glided soundlessly through the jungle. The next morning, Han whistled cheerfully as he stepped out of the shower and headed for his clothes. He had no warning. One moment he was walking, the next something had grabbed him and flung him to the floor so hard it knocked the wind out of him. Han managed to focus his eyes. Murg? What's going on? Murg snarled into Han's face.
Pilot planning to escape. Take Bria. Vic planning to steal from Yelishan masters. Vic planning to take care of Murg. Now treacherous pilot will die.
No! Han put his hands up in a gesture of appeal. Please, just listen!
Murg listened last night. Murg heard plenty.
The hands started down. Han squeezed his eyes shut and waited for the end. He felt the breeze of the Tagorian swing graze his cheek, his throat, but nothing touched him. Han opened his eyes. Murg was staring down at him, plainly torn. Finally, he grabbed Han by the shoulder, jerked him to his feet, and pushed him in the direction of his clothes.
Get dressed! Murg not want pilot's blood on his claws. We go to tell Tiruenza what pilot and girl are planning. Priest will tell other guards to kill traitors.
Han hastened over to the bunk, began dragging on his clothes. Listen, Murg, I think Mrav is here, Anyalisha. I think Tiruenza lied to you. Murg stared at Han, then his blue eyes narrowed.
You would lie to stay alive, Vic.
Yeah, I would, pal, Han said honestly. But I swear to you I ain't lying about this. Han related what Bria had told him, and then he began hatching a plan. In a couple of days, I've got to deliver a message from Zaval to a hut on Nalhutta. I've never been to Nalhutta, and I don't know the drill there, but Jalas Nebel has. I'm pretty sure Tiruenza will agree to let me and Nebel fly this mission together. I'm gonna suggest that you stay here, because there won't be room for you. Han began pacing back and forth as he thought. The priests know you like to hunt, right? So when I get permission to take Nebel with me, you should request to spend a couple of days hunting. You can move fast over rough ground, right? Murg nodded.
Very fast.
Do you think you could make it on foot to Colony 2?
Yes,
Murg sounded positive. Well, it's our best shot. If Mrav is still here on Yelisha, it's a good chance that she's at Colony 2. You go there and scout it out. Find out if she's there.
And rescue her.
Murg leapt to his feet. No, sit down. That would be the worst thing to do. They'd start a planet-wide search for the two of you. Just find her. Then when we make our getaway, you and me will hop over to Colony 2 and break her out of there. That evening, Han went over to Tiruenza's treasure room to find Bria. When she stepped out, his eyes widened.
Hey, you look great.
For the first time since he'd known her, she doffed her bulky tan robes and concealing cap. Instead, she was wearing a simple, pale blue tunic and trousers. Although modest in style, they revealed a figure that was slender but definitely female. She grinned. Exalted Teruenza told me I could dispense with my pilgrim robes while I was working on the collection. He was afraid that I'd catch them on some valuable artifact and knock it off a shelf. You're the prettiest girl on this planet, no kidding. She smiled, then the smile faded. You're apparently not the only one who thinks so. I had the strangest exchange with Gonartos, Teruenza's majordomo, this morning. He followed me around and asked me why I'd wound up coming to Yelisha to be a pilgrim. Very personal questions. Han leaned forward. So why did you come here? Or do you consider that too personal to tell me, too? She smiled. Of course not, Vic. It seems so long ago. My father encouraged me to have a career, but all Mother could think about was my making a brilliant match. She thought her dreams had come true when I started seeing Dale. Han felt a stab of jealousy, but reminded himself that there had been other girls in his past. We were on the verge of getting engaged when I caught him sneaking around with another girl, so I told him it was over. My mother was furious with me for breaking up with Dale. He came from one of the richest families on Corellia. I felt betrayed and heartbroken. Just about that time, I heard about a revival that was being held by a Yelishan missionary. The Yelishan priest finished his service with just a few seconds of exaltation, and it made me feel so good, like I belonged with those people. So I sold my jewelry, ran away, and caught the next ship for Yelisha. When they were outside, Bria told Han she had decided not to go to the exaltation that night. Then he told her the escape plan he and Murg were working on. Han sighed. I just wish I could figure out a way to break into Teruenza's living quarters and search the place until I found where he keeps those ship access codes and the security lock codes for the collection. Security codes? Bria frowned and closed her eyes. She drew a deep breath, then began reciting a string of numbers, symbols, and letters. Han grabbed her arm in excitement. That sounds like it. How'd you get them? She gave him a tremulous smile. They were in Teruenza's mind. I'm afraid they're burned into mine along with everything else. I wish I could forget them. Well, don't wish that till we're off this mudhole. 2 days later, a jittery Han and a placid, jealous Nebel stood waiting outside Jiliak the Hutt's audience room in his winter palace. Han paced nervously. Wonder how much longer we'll have to wait.
I already told you we're perfectly safe, the Celestan replied. A messenger from one hut to another is sacrosanct. While we're delivering Zaval's message and taking back his reply, we cannot be touched.
Jiliak's Rhodian majordomo beckoned to them.
His Supreme Excellency Jiliak, clan leader and protector of the righteous, will see you now.
The huge audience chamber was filled with fawning sycophants of all species, dancing girls and boys, and an orchestra off in one corner. A massive buffet table heaped with food from a dozen worlds in the opposite corner. Jalas Nebel nudged Han, and he nervously stepped forward to present Zaval's gift. Aides opened it to reveal a contraption whose purpose Han could not imagine. But Jiliak exclaimed over the gift,
A combination hookah and snackquarium. Messengers, Zaval's gift pleases me. Let us hope his message does as well. Activate it, human.
My dear Jiliak, over the past year, our ships have disappeared, and one ship was attacked. We have traced these so-called pirates to Nar Shaddaa. We know that these villainous missions were devised by you and your great-nephew, Jabba. Your enmity wounds us deeply and cuts into our profit margin. Be warned, Jiliak. Any more attacks will meet with swift reprisal upon you and your clan. We have assembled a great fleet which will surely vanquish your paltry forces.
We have?
Han thought wildly. Jiliak's scream of fury made Han and Nebel leap behind the buffet table. The Hutt Lord's tail lashed out in a giant sweep to strike the recording device, sending it flying. Zaval's image vanished.
Messengers, come forth!
Slowly, Han and Nebel crawled around the edge of the table and got shakily to their feet.
Yes, almighty Jiliak,
Nebel quavered. Jiliak's tail lashed as he moved back and forth, raging.
I send you back to that worm-ridden parasitical infestation who calls himself Zaval. Tell him he has maligned me and my kin. Tell him I alone will decide when he is to die. Do you understand, messengers?
Han had begun to recover his voice. Yes, almighty one. I'll tell him exactly what you said. On the day Vic and Jalas Nebel flew to Nal Hutta, and Murg was hunting for Mrav, Bria had just finished devotions and was heading for the path leading back to her dorm when Gunnar Toss fell into step beside her. The elderly Zissian reached out to grasp her arm, but Bria yanked it away. The Majordomo smiled as he stepped forward, barring her path.
The Exalted One, Tirwenza, wishes to speak with you, Pilgrim 921.
The High Priest peered down at her as she made the proper obeisance.
Pilgrim 921, you have served us faithfully, and I am pleased with you.
Tirwenza indicated the Majordomo.
Gunnar Toss has asked me for your hand in marriage, and I am pleased to grant his request. Stand before me, and I will pronounce the words to make you his wife.
Bria gasped. Then she felt a wash of pleasure engulf her. The sensation was so intense, so warm, so loving that she might have agreed to anything. But just as she was about to nod like a pliant zombie, Vic's face swam before her eyes. Bria's spine stiffened and her chin came up. She forced herself to keep her eyes modestly downcast. But, Exalted One, I have taken vows of chastity. I cannot marry anyone.
Your piety does you credit, Pilgrim. And yet the One and the All bless fruitful unions just as they bless the celibate state. I am granting you a special dispensation so that you may marry Gunnar Toss and raise your children to be faithful to the One and the All.
Clever old monster, Bria thought. She took a long, deep breath to give herself time to think. Very well, Exalted One. If this is the will of the One and the All, I must bow to it. But, Exalted One, I must follow the customs of my own people before I can be married. I ask for but a day to purify myself and prepare a traditional wedding gown. Bria held her breath as Tirwenza hesitated. Finally, the High Priest must have decided that she wasn't asking for that much.
Very well, Pilgrim 921. Tomorrow evening, before the entire assembly, you and Gunnar Toss shall be joined.
Please, Vic, Bria thought frantically. Hurry back! Having returned to Yelisha after his and Jalas Nebel's trip to Nal Hutta, Han headed for his room, where he was waylaid by Murg. The Togorian had important news.
I found Mrav. Hear what priests tell pilgrims. Pilate will be roused at dawn to fly to Colony 2 and take her and other shipload of pilgrims to space station to meet incoming ship. Ship coming from Kessel, so no time to lose. Must escape now, or Mrav will be gone and made a slave in Kessel mines.
Escape tonight?
Yes.
Okay, okay, pal, calm down. Han tried to think what had to be done. First things first, we'll need some blasters, 5 or 6 of them. You used to live in the guards' barracks. Think you can sneak in and get them? Murg nodded.
Yes.
If I were you, I'd swipe them from the Gamorreans. They're dumb as a box of rocks, and they sleep like logs. Murg's whiskers twitched with amusement.
Yes.
The first item on Han's agenda was to knock out the colony's comm units. He didn't want anyone summoning reinforcements. When he reached the comm center, He dug in his pocket for the scrap of flimsy that Bria had given him, containing all of the security codes she'd gained from her foray into Terowenz's mind. With a soft electronic hum, the door swung open. Han grinned as he crept inside. That's my girl. There was a guard stationed there, as Han had known there would be. A Twi'lek asleep in the chair. Han drew his blaster, changed the setting to stun, and squeezed the trigger. A blue circular burst erupted, enveloping the guard. The Twi'lek jerked once, then collapsed bonelessly into the chair, looking exactly the same, except the snores had stopped. Stepping over to the comm unit, Han pulled out the small multi-tool most pilots carried in their pockets and set to work loosening the casing. His eyes widened at the myriad wires, circuits, transponders, cables, and row after row of identical unlabeled compartments. Han groaned aloud. How am I supposed to know which of these carries the line to the power generators? Selecting a wire at random, he cut it with the multi-tool's small laser torch. The power indicator remained on. Han cut another wire, then another. Stupid board! Han drew his blaster, thumbed it up to full intensity, and discharged it right into the middle of the stubborn console's innards. Flame shot up. The smell of singed insulation tickled his nostrils. Sparks erupted, and the power indicator went out. Han's next step was to find Bria. He knew that her little bunk was on the second floor of the dorm. Han tiptoed up the stairs, blaster set on stun at the ready, but he met no one. He wasn't sure which bunk Bria occupied. Peering through his infrared goggles he had borrowed, he padded quietly down the central aisle, glancing at the sleeping faces in the couches, pallets, and bunks favored by various species. A board creaked beneath his foot, and Han paused, holding his breath. A figure clad in a white nightshirt sat up in a bunk. "Vic?" Bria whispered. Han nodded and beckoned urgently. "Fast!" She pulled her tunic on over the nightshirt, and they made a cautious way down the stairs and out into the blackness of the night. He broke into a run, and she pounded gamely alongside him. Soon, though, her stride shortened, and he could tell that she was fighting a stitch in her side. Slowing to a rapid walk, he towed her along the jungle path. She yielded to his urgent tug and began jogging again. By the time they reached the administration center, Murg was waiting for them outside Turowenz's collection room. At his feet lay a pile of blasters. Bria's eyes widened. "What are those for?" Han was already busy at the door. "Diversion. Okay, now, here's this bypass code." As before, the door opened. Han turned to the other two. "All right, you start packing. I'll be back in about 15 minutes. Han grabbed the blasters and headed out the door. Carrying 6 guns in one's arms, he discovered, wasn't easy. He shoved them into the front of his coverall and into his belt. They impeded his motion somewhat, but that was better than juggling them in his arms. It took him nearly 7 minutes to reach the first Glitterstim factory, and another 2 to creep up close enough to the guard, a huge Gamorrean, to stun the alien at close range. When Han reached the bottom level where Bria had worked, he turned right to where he'd caught a glimpse of the containers of raw Glitterstim waiting to be apportioned to the workers. Yanking 5 blasters out of his belt, Han arranged them atop the Glitterstim and set each powerful weapon to overload. A thin whining filled the air, growing louder in the cavernous space. That ought to do it. Han knew he had only minutes to get out before the whole place exploded. He bolted for the turbo lift. He was halfway back to the administration center when he felt the ground shake and turned to see a gout of yellow flame reaching into the night. Moments later, the blue sparks of Glitterstim fizzled up like fireworks, sending sparkling streamers high into the air. Han could barely guess how many credits he was watching go up in smoke. It was a sobering sight. Guards appeared all over now, shouting and yelling questions, but none stopped or questioned Han. He made it to the door of the collection room, looked both ways, and then slipped inside. Bria and Murg looked up, saw him, then relaxed visibly.
"What did Vic do?" Murg asked.
Han grinned. "Vic blew up the Glitterstim factory. The whole bunch of pilgrims are now out of a job." He reached for a hand-sized sculpture of a Torsk from Alzok 3, carved from lapis, and when it proved heavier than he'd realized, yanked hard to pull it toward him. The scopes are tilted up to reveal a snarl of wires and transponders. Next door, in Tirowenza's personal apartments, an alarm began to buzz stridently. Hans stared at the sculpture, then at his fellow thieves. Uh-oh. The doors on either side of the collection room burst open simultaneously. Tirowenza stood framed in the door to his apartment, snorting with rage. Zaval and a squad of guards filled the double doors to the corridor. Han grabbed Bria and dived behind the huge white jade fountain that stood in the middle of the room, while Murg took refuge behind the central support pillar. Zaval shot forward on his repulsor lift sled.
Get them!
Tirowenza charged like a mad beast, head down, horn ready. Han snapped off a shot, saw the blue stun bolt, and cursed as he thumbed the weapon's intensity up to full. The stun beam didn't even slow Tirowenza down. Murg aimed, fired, and brought down a Sulistan guard. Han squeezed the trigger again. The blaster bolt ricocheted off Zaval's sled and struck the support pillar nearest the door, burning it half through. The pillar sagged, but held. As Tirowenza headed for Murg, the big Tagorian leaped out and grabbed the High Priest, clutching him around the neck and by his horn. The Talanda Till's momentum caused his massive hindquarters to swing around and slam into the middle pillar with a huge thump. The floor quivered and dust sifted downward from the ceiling. Tirowenza's rear feet skidded, and the High Priest went down. The ground shook again. Han snapped off a shot and a Gamorrean screamed and fell back into the hallway. Another blaster bolt sizzled past Han, so close that he felt it singe his hair. He dropped to the floor, rolled, and snapped off two more shots at the underside of Zaval's sled. As he'd intended, the blaster bolts hit the housing for the repulsor lift unit. Instead of sinking to the floor, the sled's speed and directional controls went wild. With Zaval vainly trying to control it, the big sled hurtled forward at top speed. Mowing down everything in its path, the sled careened around the collections room with Zaval, a helpless passenger. Then the sled plowed into the room's central pillar. The support column buckled and groaned, then bent in two and snapped off. Then the pillar Han had partially vaporized followed suit. Half of the ceiling bulged, cracked, and plummeted down. Han recovered himself just in time to yank Bria out of the way as a huge chunk of stone hurtled at them from the upper level. Zaval screamed as massive chunks pinned him to the shattered remains of his sled. Coughing and gagging, Han crawled off Bria. He stared at the spot where Zaval had been, but all he could see of the buried hut overlord was his spasmodically jerking tail. Tirowenza had thrown himself beneath the protection of a massive antique table and remained relatively unscathed. When the debris stopped falling, he crawled out from under the dust, lowered his head, and charged. Han fired a bolt into his right flank, sending him crashing to the floor with a scream. Come on! Han grabbed Bria and the knapsack of stolen goods and gestured to Murg. We're getting out of here! Slipping in the rubble and stumbling over bodies, the three thieves headed for the double doors where Han motioned his comrades back and cautiously slid his head around the edge of the door, only to be rewarded by a blaster bolt that nearly took his ear off.
Murg, take Bria out the other way. Go through Tirowenza's door and we'll catch them in a crossfire on the count of 50.
The Tagorian nodded and he and Bria slipped back through the ruins of the treasure room. Silently, Han counted. At 15, he stuck his hand around the edge of the door and snapped off four quick shots. He was rewarded with a howl of agony. One more down. He waited, counting and trying not to cough on the dust that filled the air. 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50. Han dived out the door, hit the corridor rolling, and fired. Red blaster bolts zinged past his legs and where his head would have been, but he got another guard. The remaining two guards took to their heels and pounded away from Murg and Bria, leaping over Han's still recumbent body as they did so. Han got to his feet just in time to hear Murg let out a huge battle roar and grapple with... Who? Han couldn't see anyone. Has he gone crazy? Han wondered. Then he heard a loud hiss and glimpsed a reddish-orange eye and a mouth full of teeth. He saw a blaster wave, seemingly in midair, and suddenly he could make out the warty, scale being. A skin changer. The creature was the exact color of the walls and floor in the dimly lit corridor. Murg growled as he savagely attacked the era. Han winced as Murg fell to his knees, grasping his foe. With a motion like a striking growl viper, the Tagorian buried his fangs in the era's throat and ripped. Blood spurted into the air. "Look out!" Bria yelled, and Han instinctively ducked. Bria's blaster went off in stun mode just over his head, making his ears ring. He straightened up in time to see Gunnar toss slowly crumpling to the floor as a blaster slipped from his fingers. Han walked over to the old major domo and, picking up the blaster, slipped it into his belt. Bria came to stand beside him. "Oh, Vic, all I can think is that if you hadn't come back today, tonight I'd have been his wife." She shuddered. "Huh? Terowenza was going to force me to marry him tomorrow." "Well, I'm glad you only stunned him. He may have been a lecherous old creep, but how can I blame him for being attracted to you?" The talisman was a little larger than the Yelishan dream, but instead of cargo space, most of its interior was given over to lavish passenger quarters and amenities. It was proportioned and laid out for the Talanda Til, so only the pilot's cabin contained human-style seats. There was one small, human-sized bunk in a guard's cabin. The rest of the passenger cabins were outfitted with the sleeping hammocks the Talanda Til favored. Murg strapped himself in.
"Now from Rav. Right, Vic?"
"Right, pal. We should be there at sunrise. Oh, and by the way, there's something I'd better tell you two."
What?
Asked Bria and Murg together. "My name's not Vic Drago. My real name is Han Solo. It'd be good if you started calling me that." Colony 2 was on the other side of the Mountains of Faith, set on the northeastern edge of the shallow ocean that enclosed the entire eastern continent. Bria pointed excitedly.
"I see them! There's a big crowd assembling at the altar!"
Carefully, Han brought the talisman in over the amphitheater.